Anything on Samachtes Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, if a father deposited money with third party on behalf of his daughter, so he wants that eventually this money should be used. Morning, Ali. So father deposited money with a third party on behalf of his daughter, where he planned what he plans is this money should be kept in trust for her. This money should be kept in trust for her until she gets older or until she gets married, as we'll see in the Gemara. The point being that then this way, eventually she can use it to buy a field. She can use it for a nedunya when she gets married. Anyway, she says, I trust my husband that he'll do the right thing with the money. So therefore she tells this third party, give the money to my husband and let him be able to, he can eventually buy the field for me. Meanwhile, he can decide what he wants to do with it. He can invest it or whatever. So the Mishnah says, Yasa Sholish Mashal Hushlash Biyade Divrei Reb Meir. Reb Meir says the Sholish should still do what he was told. In other words, he should ignore what she's saying because, as the Gemara is going to say, Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Ames, there's a mitzvah to fulfill what a dead person said. So in this case, since her father has since passed away, and he says the money should be kept in trust for her until she's older, until she's married, whatever, as we'll see in the Gemara, then she doesn't have the right to override that. Rabbi Yossi says, no, she could override it. V'chi'ena el sada. After all, consider if there were an actual... So the shalosh should end up buying the field with it, or doing whatever the father had said to do with it, rather than just give the money to her husband to use as he see fits. But Rabbi Yossi says, "V'chi'ena el sada." After all, Rabbi Yossi says, even if there was already a field, even if it wasn't money, even if the father had given over a field to this shalish to take care of, v'hi roitzal moshra, and she wants to sell that field, harei mechora me'achshav, it might as well be sold as of now. In other words, she would have every right to sell that field. So by the same token, why shouldn't she have the right to say that money should be given to her husband? Morning. And in fact, Tosfos says, Reb Meir would disagree with that premise. Reb Meir would say, actually, she would not have the right to do that for the same reason. Mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. So therefore, she'd have to keep it in trust until the appropriate time. The Mishnah finishes off, when are we talking about? Bigdoila, when she is a Gdoila, so she's already a Naira or older. Aval B'Ktana, but if she's a Ktana at the time, Ein Ma'is Ktana Klum, then what a Ktana does doesn't count for anything, and then we certainly wouldn't listen to her as far as anything. The Gemara is going to explain what that last line is. Is that last line according to the Meir or according to the Yossi or both? So the Gemara starts off, Tana Rabban, Hamashlish Mois Lachasonai, if a person deposits money with a third party on behalf of his son-in-law, Likach Mehen Sadalabitai, where the plan is that eventually he wants that money to be used by the Shalish to buy a field on behalf of his daughter, and this field will become either Nichset Sein Barzel or Nichset Malorg, as the case may be. That she says, let the money be given to my husband and let him spend it as he sees fit. Like we said, he can invest it. Meanwhile, eventually he can buy the field. Why should the shalish have to be involved? So the braisa says, minah nisuin, if she's already married, harishus biyada, then she has permission to do that. Because it actually explains the father, what was the purpose in giving it to the shalish, was until she gets married. After all, once she gets married, the husband has the right to pay us from her property. So at that point, then if she says, let's give it to my husband and let him go and buy the field or do whatever he's going to do with it, then sure, she can do that. Mina Erosin, on the other hand, if she's still during the time of Erosin, Yasa Sholish, Mashahu Shlosh Biyodai, then the Sholish should follow the instructions that he was given and not just give it to her husband, to you, or her chasin, to use open ended, give it a mayor. That's what a mayor says. So even a mayor in our, so in other words, the Braisa is clarifying that even a mayor in our Mishnah, who said Yasa Sholish, Mashahu Shlosh Biyodai, is talking about only during the Erosin. Rabbi Yossi makes a further distinction. Hagdola, we also said in the mission of Bemed Romam Gdola, that's where we have to figure out whether that last line of the mission is pointed a mayor or pointed a Yossi. So the Braisa continues, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Hagdola, if she's an adult, Bein Minan Isurin or Bein Minan Eilusin. Then whether it's during the Eilusin or whether it's during the Nisurin or even earlier during the Eilusin, Harishus Biyada, then we listen to her and the money is taken from the Shalish and given to her Chasin and he does whatever he feels is appropriate with it. Ketana, Bein Minan Isurin, Bein Minan Eilusin. But if she's a Ketana, whether it's during the time of Nisurin or Eilusin, Yasa Shalish Masha Hushlash Biyada. Then the Shalish should follow the instructions that he was given. So according to Rabbi Yossi, the key factor seems to be, as she a Ketana or Gdola, unlike Rabbi Meir was saying, the key factor is it during Eirusin or Nisuin? So if you want to ask, my Benayhu, well, what exactly is the case where they're arguing about? Ilema Ketana min Nisuin ikka Benayhu. Are you going to say they're arguing where she's a Ketana, but she's already married? Did Rabbi Meir sabah harushus biyada? Where you're going to say Rabbi Meir says that we list, that she has the right to have that money taken from the shalish and given to her husband. So the mayor would say you're allowed to do that, because after all, the mayor is saying it depends on whether it's Eirusin or Nisurin. She's already a Nisura. Then Rabbi Yossi comes along and says that no, even if she's already married, fully married, then still only if she's a Gdola, not a Ketana. The problem with that is, Ema Seifa. Now, by the way, Tosfos points out, the Gemara knows for a fact that it's pretty obvious already that there is that definitely they argue when she's a gedola and it's Eirusin, where the mayor says that since it's Eirusin, then the Shalish does his thing, and Rabbi Yossi says since she's a gedola, then she has the rights over it. Fine, but the Gemara is asking, among the other, we have to consider there are four possible cases over here. Ketana during Eirusin, Ketana during Nisuin, gedola during Eirusin, gedola during Nisuin. So fine, we know they're arguing about Gdola Mina Eirusin. Is there any other case that they're arguing about? Or are we going to say that they're arguing about Ketana Mina Nisuin? And then we'd say that they're arguing in two out of the four cases. Well, the problem with that is, Ema Sefer, look at the next part of the Mishnah. The last line of the Mishnah said, Av Ketana Ein Ma'is Ketana Klum. We said if she's a Ketana, then what a Ketana does doesn't count for anything. Now we have to ask, Homan Katanila, which of the two Tanoim is saying that line? Ilema Rabbi Yossi, would it be Rabbi Yossi? You don't need it. You don't need Rabbi Yossi to be saying that Ein Ma'is Ketana Klum, because we can derive it from what he said earlier in the Mishnah. After all, Rabbi Yossi compared this case where the father deposited money with a shalish. Rabbi Yossi says you should let her give it to her husband to do what he feels is appropriate with it, because Rabbi Yossi says, after all, if she had a field that she inherited from her father, she'd perfectly be able to sell it. And he says, if she wanted to sell it, then it could be sold already as of now. There's nothing preventing her from selling it. Well, the fact is, Gdola debas zvini ein, only a Gdola who's capable of selling, who's selling real estate, then yes, Ketana delavas vini hiloi. But a Ketana, anyway, can't sell real estate. Further on in the Gemara, we're going to talk about soon, about pu'utais, about children, from a certain age, they can sell metalplin, but to sell karka, in fact, there's a Gemara elsewhere in Gittin and in Baba Basra that says that that a person has to be 20 years old before they can sell karka. So by definition, only as a gdola is she going to be able to sell karka. So when Rabbi Yossi is saying, and when Rabbi Yossi is comparing it to selling karka, by implication, he's saying that applies only to a gdola. So we don't need him to be saying in the last line of the Mishnah, Ein Ma'is Ketana Klum. Ella, Rabbi Meir. So evidently, we would have to say that last line of the Mishnah is according to the Meir. And therefore, we would have to say, V'chsuri Mechsura. We would have to say that the Mishnah is missing a phrase, V'hachi Katani. So the Mishnah would be saying like this: Yasa Shalish Masha Hushlash Biyadei. Reb Meir is saying that the Shalish should follow the instructions that the father gave him. Bamed Vonam Amurim Mina Eirusin. But here is the part that the Mishnah would be missing, which we're inferring from what Reb Meir says. Bamed Vonam Amurim Mina Eirusin. When is that talking about? If she's only during the time of Eirusin. So then we say the father's instruction was that until she gets married, the money should remain in the hand of the shalish, and he should be the one responsible for spending it on the field or the nindunya or whatever. Avamin and Isurin or Rishus B'yada. But if it was after Misurin, then she would have the right to say the money should be given to her husband. And then the Mishnah would continue. B'med Ramamun, B'gdola, when would that be talking about? All of that. The distinction between Erosin and Nisuin, only if she's a Gdola, Avab Ktana, in my Ktana Klum. But if she's a Ktana, then what a Ktana does doesn't count for anything. So therefore, if we understand the Mishnah that way, then we would say that the Ktana, then we would say, so then it would come out, both Reb Meir and Reb Yossi would agree that if she's a Ktana, then we don't listen to her. So therefore, it would come out that there's no Machloikis in that part, when she's a ktana minanisur. So Ella, so you're right, necessarily, we have to say gdola mina erisin ikabinai. The only argument between them is if she's a gdola, but it's during the erisin. So if she's a gdola and it's after misurin, everybody agrees that we give it to her husband. We tell the shalish, your job is over, give it to the husband, let him use it, so let him buy the field or do whatever the father had wanted with it. If she's a ktana mina erisin, then everybody agrees we don't listen because she's a ktana and it's doing erisin. And if she's a ktana mina nisurin, we just said that both of them agree you also don't listen to her because she's a ktana. So the machlokas would only be if she's a gdola, but it's doing erisin. Only one of the four cases.
During erisin,
there would be a machlokas if she's a gdola. Right. After she gets married, then everybody would agree that you listen to her. Yeah. So the Gemara finishes off. So who is the halacha like? Itmar, Reb Yehuda Amar Shmuel halacha k'Reb Yosi. Reb Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel that the halacha is like Reb Yosi. So in that case, therefore, since she is a gdola, then he says the halacha would be like Reb Yosi, and she has the right to say that the money should be given to her husband, even during erusin. Rava Amar Reb Nachman halacha k'Reb Meir. But Rava says in the name of Reb Nachman the halacha is like Reb Meir. That, as the Gemara is going to establish now, mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. And therefore, even as long as it's doing erusin, we can't give it to her. Even if she's a gdola, we have to wait till after misur.
But no one holds that the father, it happens, there are divorces or bad marriages. You don't see it in the beginning. No one said that you have to make the kind of mess even after she's a gdola to have it kept by a third party.
No. Because once she's a gdola and once she's married, then at that point, if she trusts her husband to give it to him, then that's her business. Yeah.
Usually everyone trusts. I mean, it was given 20 years down the road.
Right. So, but it was given to him. I mean, the point is, he's not going to hold on to it indefinitely. After all, it was given for the purpose of buying a field or buying whatever investment it is. So ultimately, he starts to do that. All she's saying is, I don't need you, the shalish. I don't need you, some third party, to be involved. I trust my husband that he'll go and buy the appropriate field and do what he was told. Yeah, we're not talking about him holding it open-ended. We're talking about that temporarily he may invest it or something, and eventually, yeah. Okay.
Down the road, it's hers.
Yeah. Shmuel and Reb Nachman are in different generations. Yeah, Reb Nachman was the next generation after Shmuel. I don't know if he's officially a Talmud of Shmuel or if he's a Talmud of the Talmudim of Shmuel, but whatever. Yeah, in general, the halacha is once you get to the time of Rava and later, we usually say halacha kebasroi, that the halacha is like the later Amoraim, and that's how it is over here. Since Rava says in the name of Reb Nachman, then since it's Rava saying in the name of Reb Nachman, then the halacha is like it.
So in one generation, in KU forgot and didn't know.
No, it's not a matter of forgotten. There were different opinions who the halacha should be like. Same as anything else. No, it's just Shmuel held one way and Reb Nachman held a different way. Yeah, that happens all the time. So now the Gemara is going to tell a story where the Gemara leaves out the first half of the story. The first half is in the Gemara in Tainis. The story is over there, but the reason why the Gemara is bringing it is because it directly relates to our mission. The story is over there that there were Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan. They were chaverim. They were both poor Tamid Chachamim. So they decided to leave the Beis Medrash for a while and go work for a living. Then at one point, they heard, to make a long story short, Rabbi Yochanan heard a baskal that says that if he returns to the yeshiva now, he will become the Rosh Yeshiva. Ilfa did not hear that baskal. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan left and went back to the yeshiva and became the Rosh Yeshiva and became the great Rabbi Yochanan that we have all over Shas. By the time Ilfa came back, Rabbi Yochanan had already been appointed Rosh Hashiv. So now Ilfa wanted to demonstrate that don't think that all that time that I spent away from learning, that it affected, that now I don't know as much as Rabbi Yochanan. You should know. I know a lot also. It could be he meant that in order to, it shouldn't create a chil Hashem. People shouldn't think that a Talmid Chacham went off the derech. It could be that he wanted to argue that his way in Avodah is perfectly valid also, Torah im derech eretz, whatever the case. So now comes the part that we say in the Gemara over here.
You've actually told me that this Gemara is from Titus?
So actually, yeah.
He has to know that.
Yeah. Rashi mentions it over here, yeah. Rashi says, Gufa de'uvda masech Titus. Yeah, he says, yeah. Okay, so Ilfa tola nafshe v'iskaya de machosa. He leaned against, or he hung himself from the mast of a ship. Iskaria, Rashi says, means the mast. Makusa means the sail. So it's the part of the mast where you attach the sail. So he's standing up there on the top part of the mast of a ship. Omar, and he announces, Ika de Osi, de Omali Milsi, de Beir of Chiavir of Oshia. If anybody comes and tells me something from a braisa that was taught in the yeshiva of Reb Chiya and Reb Oshia, where we know that those braisas are very, very precise and very reliable, and I don't show how what's in that braisa is implied in a Mishnah, because we know the braisas are not something independent of the Mishnah. Reb Chiya and Reb Oshia, their braisas are meant to explain the Mishnah. So we have many times, so we have all over the place where you'll have something briefly in a Mishnah, maybe even in just one word or something, and then a braisa will spell out a din, but we can actually deduce that from the wording that Rebbe used in the Mishnah. So now Ilfa says, if anybody brings me a braisa from Reb Chiya and Reb Oshia, v'loy pashit na leimim asnisin, and I'm not able to demonstrate where you can find something about it in Mishnayos, then I will fall down from the mast and drown. Now, on the one hand, it could be a guzma. He's saying, you know, I'm so certain of myself that I know how to derive this kind of thing. In fact, Reuven Margolius says on this that when he explains that actually each one of them had their own valid derech and avodah. He says that Rabbi Yochanan, we find in a medrash, came from a rich family. He gave it all up in order to learn Torah. But the point is, in other words, he had what to fall back on if he doesn't make enough. If while he's learning Torah he needs to be supported, then he has what to fall back on. Ilfa didn't.
Why did he leave then?
He left because that's the thing. So at one point he left because he figured he should make his own parnasa. But then he heard this baskel, so he returned. Whereas Ilfa, Rabbi Reuven Margolius says, may have come from a poor family, so he didn't have anything to fall back on. So therefore, he figures the only logical thing to do is Torah Deim Derech Eretz, like it says in Pirkei Avos.
If Torah Manasseh then says that you can, and we learn tomorrow that you could learn Hashem provides.
Right, but I guess the point seems to be Rabbi Yochanan, having heard that basko, he was being told min hashamayim that he's on the level that he can learn Torah and not have to ever worry about his parnosa. Ilfa, not having heard that basko, has to work within Darchei HaTeva. Anyway, there is an interesting explanation also that I've seen that when he says I'll fall off the mast and drown, he doesn't literally mean he's going to drown. Of course, a person's not allowed to do that. He means, in other words, if you can show that I don't know what I'm supposed to in Torah, then fine, I agree. I'll give up my method of going on the mast of the ship, namely going hoisakonias seicher, of going out on ships and then earning a living, and I'll taka follow Rabbi Yochanan's shita and learn exclusively in the Beis Medrash. So I'll fall off the ship and I'll drown. In other words, I'll drown myself in the sea of Torah. Yeah.
But the
Pashtus, he's saying, I'll drown, but in other words, then he would say.
Why did you have to add the word with the vine?
Well, in other words, the point is he wants to stress how seriously he's taking this. Anyway, so the Gemara continues. Osal Husava, a certain old Talmud Chacham came, and there are places where Tosfos explains that means Eliyahu Hanavi. Whether that means here, I don't know. Anyway, so he came. Tonale, he taught him the following brisa and asked, "Where's a source in the Mishnah for this?" A brisa says, "Ha'oyma tnu livni tnu sheka levonai b'shabbos." If a person says before Shchivmera says before he passes away, give one, he tells an apotropos who's in charge of the estate, he tells him, give a shekel to my children for every week, b'Shabbos. Every Shabbos also means the week, like Hayom Yom Rishon b'Shabbos. So he tells him, give them one shekel for their expenses every week. Ve'ura'uyin litin lehem sela. But the situation is that really they need a sela per week. So he didn't know when he passed away that prices are going to rise, that there's going to be inflation. So now, a shekel is not enough for them. So then, noisin lahem sela. So then the apotropos should give them a sela per week. After all, he didn't want that they should starve or something. He figured a shekel per week would be enough. He didn't know that's not going to work. V'im omer al titnu lahem el a shekel. But on the other hand, if he told the person, give them only a shekel, then he made it clear that he wants no more than a shekel. A noisin lahem el a shekel. Then we give them only a shekel. And they will have to, they may have to work, they may have to beg for tzedakah, whatever it is. Actually, the Shittim Kubetzis brings an opinion from Reb Meir, the Pashtus the Ramah, I guess, who says that if the situation is that they're literally going to starve to death without on only a shekel, then we're not talking about that. That would already be midas tzedakah. But we're talking about in a situation where they can barely scrape by on a shekel. But so usually, if you hadn't said el a shekel, we would give them a sela because that's the normal amount. But because they can barely scrape by, then we only give them a shekel since that's what he said. A shekel, by the way, is a half a sela. What?
I didn't understand what you just said.
So the Shittim Kubetzis brings an opinion that if they absolutely cannot live on a shekel at all, and if they have only a shekel, which is a half a sela, they're going to die of hunger. That's not what we're talking about, he says. We're talking about in a situation where they can scrape by on it. And it continues the Braisa. The im omer im mesu yushra achenim tachtehim. If the father said, when they die, then if they, Rashi says it means if they die childless, then other people should inherit them. Now, usually the rule would be if they die childless, then it's going to go back to if they have any brothers, then any brothers, they'll inherit. If they don't have brothers, then sisters. If not, then it'll go to the father's brothers or the father's sisters, and we keep on going up the family tree. But here, instead, he says that if they die without children, he wants the estate to go to somebody else. So then whether he says the expression tnu lahem shekel, or whether he says al titnu, give them only a shekel, a noisin lahem el shekel, then we give them only a shekel because he's thinking towards the future. Since he made other people are going to be yashining them, he wants that Yerusha should eventually go to those other people as much as possible, and therefore that not more than a shekel of it per week should be taken out for their expenses. So the question is, where do we find anything about this in the Mishnah? Omale, so Ilfa answered, Halmani, Reb Meir, that follows the opinion of Reb Meir of our Mishnah. Yasa Shalosh Masha Hushlosh Yadeh. De Omer, now why is Reb Meir saying in our Mishnah that the Shalosh should do what he was told, rather than like Reb Yossi says, once he's already the Gdola, we can already put it in? Because mitzvah lakayim, give her a mess, because it's a mitzvah to fulfill what the dead person said. Now, Tosfos points out, by the way, when Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah says, listen, why the fact is, even if she had a field, she would be able to sell it. Why don't we say that the money should also be given to her husband to control? Why doesn't Rabbi Yossi say, very simple, listen, Rabbi Meir say, you say mitzvah l'chaim divrei ames, I don't hold of that concept. Tosfos says, you're right, but Rabbi Yossi is saying, even according to you, Rabbi Meir, that mitzvah l'chaim divrei ames, the fact is, if she had a field already in her possession, she'd be able to sell it. Why shouldn't she be able to take the money from the shalish and give it to her husband? And Tosfos says earlier, Rabbi Meir would say, as a matter of fact, I hold, she wouldn't be able to sell the field for the same reason, mitzvah l'chaim divrei ames. So that's why. So even though all the nechassim ultimately belong to them because they're the yoshim, nevertheless, when they're younger, we only give them the shekel, the Shabbos, and the rest they're going to have to get from tzedakah or whatever because mitzvah l'kayim divramis. Rashi points out, by the way, an important point over here. Now, we learned earlier in the Masechta, we said that suppose before he dies, he says, I don't want the funeral expenses to be paid out of the estate. I want it to be collected from tzedakah. Then we say we don't listen to him. What do you mean? You want to keep more money for your children and have the tzibur have to pay for you and have the tzibur have to pay for your levayan? Nothing doing. So why don't we say over here? Because the thing is, it actually says really when you get down to it, the nechassim belong to the yesomim only based on his tzava. So therefore, he has the right to override it to a certain extent and say that they should get more of it, and that if they need to support themselves by collecting tzedakah or whatever, then they should do that. Okay. So now let's discuss this point further of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. Omer of chista omer ma'okra, hilchasa, the bottom line halacha is not exactly like what it said in this braisa. Bein sh'omer tshnu, bein sh'omer al titnu, whether he used the expression, give them a shekel, so he didn't make it clear it's only a shekel, but nevertheless, it comes out that the expenses are such that the cost of living is such that they need a sela, which is 2 shkalim, or vein shama al titnu, or whether he says al titnu, give them only a shekel, and I expect them to work or collect tzedakah or whatever for the rest. Either way, Rav Chista says, no salam called sokan. We give them whatever they need. If a selah is what they need, then it doesn't matter what lashon he used, you give them a selah per week. Well, the question is why? Didn't we just say the halacha is like, we know that the halacha is like Rameyer, and we just established that Rameyer is saying mitzvah l'kayim divrames. So why is Rav Chista all of a sudden telling us that it's not completely like him? The answer is, that concept of mitzvah l'kayim divrames applies to other things. But when it comes to this situation, we don't say that he actually meant that they should be given only a certain amount. He would rather have that his children are given whatever they need. If a selah per week is what they actually need for food and other basic expenses, then we should do that. Why would he have used the expression al titnu lahem? Is lazaruzinu hu da'asa, because he just wanted to be mizaruz them. He wanted to tell them, don't just think you're living off a trust fund over here and you can take it easy. You don't have to work for a living or whatever. He wants to be mizaruz them. Go work for a living. Go earn your own way in the world. But nevertheless, we still assume that he had in mind, says Rav Chista, that if they actually that if a shekel is not enough to support them per week, that we should give them the selah after all. Eventually, again, this is all talking about when they're ktanim anyway, when they're gdolim, they're anyway going to get the whole yerusha and they can do with it whatever they want. Within reason. I mean, again, we said we have the case where he says that they only inherit it for the time being and eventually it's going to go to other people. Then that's a little bit different, because there we say he does want to preserve it. You have all kinds of cases about that in Baba Basra and Nechase Lechava Acharecha Leploini. How much rights does the first person have on it? And there's, by the way, there was a considerable amount of discussion among the poskim about the ins and outs of these halachas. For example, is it indeed like Rashi says that he's saying im oma mesu yushu achem tachteim, that we're talking takas specifically, like Rashi says he's saying if they die childless, or might it even apply if they die with children? Would we say then that it goes to their yoshim, because it depends whether he used the lashon of yerusha or matana. It gets complicated, but anyway, I mean, the place for that is in Baba Basra. But anyway, Tosfos, by the way, points out an interesting point over here. We have the concept throughout Shas that whatever a Shchiv Manah says is kichsuvin b'chimisurin damu. You don't need a kinyan for it. Whatever he says is considered like it's written and given over, and you have to accomplish it. Based on what we're saying over here, mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames, why do we need that? You just say, he said, now he died, mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. Who cares? Why do we need the special takana of divrei Shchiv Manah? So Tosfos brings from Rabbi Natam the concept of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames is only, first of all, Tosfos says it's only in the case like we're talking about over here, where there's a shulish, where there's a third party involved. So when there's no third party involved, then we don't say mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames, then we have to resort to matnas shchiv manah. In other words, so then you would say, so mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames would be regardless. He said certain instructions, now he died, therefore there's a mitzvah to be mekayim. That is when he gave the money, like in our Mishnah, or like in Rameyer's case, to a third party to hold on to, and he gave instructions. So then we say, it doesn't matter whether at the time he was a Bori or a Shchiv Manah, the fact is, now he's dead, therefore mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. But in a regular case, in a different case, when there's no Shodesh, then we would say, if he gave it as a Bori, then we would say that, no, there's no particular reason we need to listen to it. Only when he gave it as a Shchiv Manah, then we say the special rule that divrei Shchiv Manah k'ksuvin v'chim esurin damu. That's one answer. Then Tosfos says another point is here we're told that in all cases we're talking about over here that the giver died while the recipient was still alive. Here the father died, the children are still alive. But what about if you have the other way around? What if a person gives a gift to somebody and then that somebody dies while the giver is still alive? That's when you need divrei shchiv manah as opposed to the mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames over here. In other words, exactly that. If like in the case we have over here where the father died, the sons are still alive, then we say mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. But when, suppose the sons had died while the father was alive, then we would say, if it was just a matter, and then later on the father died, now we can't say mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. Rather, we would have to resort to matnas shchiv manah if the father gave these instructions when he was a shchiv manah. To pass it on to the next person or whoever. Yeah. Okay. The Gemara says, speaking more about this topic, or somewhat related, but more related to the last line of the Mishnah, we said, Ein Maisa Panakum. So Tnanhasim, we learn in a Mishnah in Gittin, Hapo'uta is young children, Mikochan Mekach or Mimkoran Mecher. If they buy something, then it's considered a valid purchase in Halacha. What? Yeah, I said, Elazar is in a Hudasa, yeah. So Tnanhasim we're holding. Yeah, about the middle of Baton.
We say in regular circumstances.
So that's Tosfos has two answers. One is that we say in regular circumstances when there's no sholish. When there's a sholish, then that wouldn't necessarily apply, but instead we apply mitzvah l'kayim d'ranes. Or the other possibility is that it depends who died first. Did the Makabel die while the Noisin was still alive, or vice versa? That if the Makabel died while the Noisin was still alive, then we would say that, so then if the Makabel died while the Noisin was still alive, then we don't apply mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'nes. But then if the original Noisin gave it as a shivmina, then divrei shivmina k'ksuvim l'chim asurim. But if he survives him, then we say mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'nes. Okay.
So the Noisin.
What?
Did Ilfa have to jump or not?
So he didn't have to jump because he was able to answer. Yeah.
Happy ending.
Right.
Happy ending.
So the happy ending, yeah. Right. Right. We forgot. Right. We forgot about that. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tnan Hossam. Now we learn in a Mishnah in Gittin, Hapo'utos, children. Now Rashi explains over here we mean children 8 or 9 years old. The truth is the Gemara there in Gittin gives different opinions. The Gemara gives several different opinions of Amiroyim over there giving different ages between 6 and 10. La halacha, what we do is, beginning from age 6, we have to see if the kid is sharp. After age 10, we say, unless the kid is like mentally deficient or something. So between 6 and 10, if they buy or sell something, the talpin, then we have to find out, do they know what they're doing? Do they understand what money and what buying and selling is all about? Anyway, the Mishnah says, Mikochan mekach mimkaran mecher, when they buy something that's considered validly bought by halacha, when they sell something that's considered validly sold by halacha, the metalplin, specifically when it comes to metalplin, karka, like we said before, we have to have either shtei sidos or 20 years old. I said before 20 years old, but actually the truth is the Gemara says that it's only benifse aviv. If he inherited property from his father, then he has to be 20 before he sold it, but before he sells it. If he himself bought property, then that's valid after shtei sidos.
What about the age 13?
So 13 is usually the age of shtei sidos. So
the God of
it. Yeah, that's the thing. But when it, right, so there's three different things. We're saying pu'uta is from between 6 and 10 years old already, depending how sharp they are, can already buy and sell metalplin. To buy and sell karka on their own, that they can do from shtei sidos, which is typically 12 or 13 years old. Then if it's property they inherited from their father, v'limkum v'nichse aviv, then they have to be 20 years old. Anyway, the point of that is, by the way, the Chachamim wanted that, these kids have to be able to live. So therefore, we want to allow them to buy and sell on their own so they can get food, and they can get food to live off of. So the Gemara says, Omer Rafram, lo yishonu ela she'en shem apotropos. That applies only if they don't have an apotropos. So their father died, there's no apotropos, they're on their own. So then we say, once they're between 6 and 10 years old, depending on how sharp they are, then they can buy and sell. Avo yeshem apotropos, but if the father appointed an apotropos, ein mekochan mekach ve'ein mimkoren mecher, then anything they buy is not considered buying, anything they sell is not considered selling, because the apotropos' job is to deal with those kinds of things on their behalf. Tosfos says, by the way, that Rabbeinu Tam says in Tosfos, they still could give a present. Then there's no logical reason to distinguish between whether it's an apotropos or not. We're talking about buying and selling. Tosfos says that a gift they would still be able to give even if there's an apotropos. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Mimai, where does Rafram get that from? Midkatoni ein maisa kana klum. Because our Mishnah said the maisa of a kana doesn't count for anything. So therefore, we see. So what are you telling me? Pu'utis can buy and sell if our Mishnah says ein maisa kana klum. Obviously, the distinction must be whether there's an apotropos. The Gemara asks why, but Doma Hech Deika Shol is shiny. Why? Maybe in our Mishnah, there's not really an apotropos. There's not somebody in charge of the entire estate, but there's a sholish for this particular sum of money that he wants to be preserved for his daughter. So maybe only when there's a sholish do we say in my sakanakum. The answer is imkain, if that's all it meant. Listening, then the Mishnah could have said, Avabakana, Yasa Sholish, Mashaush Lashbiyadri. then should have said, if she's a ketana, then the shalish should follow the instructions that he was given. My ein mais a ketana klum. What does the Mishnah mean by saying more generically, whatever a ketana does doesn't count? Shema minah for the ba'alma. By that, the Mishnah is implying not only in the specific case of our Mishnah of a shalish who is responsible for a particular sum of money, but in general, we say that what a ketana does doesn't count for anything. And what we mean is when there's an apotropos. So Rashi points out an apotropos, after all, is a little bit like a shalish. So by using, if the Mishnah had said yasa shalish, then we would only understand that that applies to a shalish. By saying more generically, ein ma'aseh ketana klum, we're meant to understand that when there's any responsible party involved, whether the shalish of our Mishnah or whether an apotropos, as in Raphram's case, then we say that ein ma'aseh ketana klum, and the shalish or the apotropos is the one who makes the decisions.
That's
only about Tana. But we're talking about Tana, of course, once she becomes a Gdola. So again, even when it comes to Pa'utos, once they become 10 years old, which is the latest age that it mentions in that Gemara in Gittin, unless we know that she's a Shoita and Pasha doesn't understand how the world works, then she's able to buy and sell on her own. And of course, once she becomes Bas Mitzvah, then she can even buy and sell real estate, except again, unless if she inherited it from her father, then the rules are different.
So then you have to be 20.
The limkum and nichsa avivat she had ben yasir.
Present can give after.
Present Tosi says that she can give even as a ketana.
I'm just wondering, is there a reason why the Gemara says any reason why a ketana matana yes and to buy it?
So Tosi doesn't say why, but Tosi just says ein svara l'chalik. There's no reason for a svara to distinguish whether they're an apotropos or not. Buying and selling, you can talk about a kid may not realize, doesn't know the full value of money. If they buy something, do we know? Did they buy it at fair market value? Did they sell it for the fair market value? Kids like money, after all. You know, you know how it is. You dangle a coin in front of a little kid, and you know they'll do anything for you. So you might have, for example, she's selling something that she should have gotten $100 for it, and somebody says, you know, I'll give you $5 for it, you know, and she's not going to know the difference. So
I'm speaking about age 18
to 20. No. So the 20 is something else. The 20 is specifically as far as nichsei aviv.
Right.
Is a property that real estate that a person inherited from their father. Since they didn't work for it, they don't really feel the full value of it. So once they're 20, once a person is 20 years old, they know how the world works. Then they already know. Then they already understand the full value. Yeah. Okay. Hadron alach metzias isha. The next parak is going to talk about various cases involving more things involving the relationship between the husband and the wife. Much of what we're going to talk about in the parak has to do of cases where we end up requiring him to give a get, or sometimes we have where he's required to give and pay the ksuba, sometimes we have where he's not required to pay the ksuba, and sometimes we have where the kiddushin are bottled to begin with, because it turns out that there was a mistake. So that sort of thing is going to be the subject of our pay. So the Mishnah says, "Hamadiras ishte milahonis loy." If a husband makes a neder that his wife is not allowed to have hana from him. Now Rashi points out that neder will not include tashmish. It's going to include it because he can't answer the hana of his tashmish to her. He's mishuban, right? He's mishuban to her for tashmish. So you said sherksus vayna, yeah. So he wouldn't aser, so tashmish wouldn't be aser, but nevertheless he's not able to support her. So what do we do as far as supporting her? Ad lamed yom yamed parnas. If it's up to 30 days, then he should arrange for the parnas a shliach who will support her. The Gemara is going to explain at the bottom of Amud Beis how exactly we appoint that shliach. Because after all, shluchu shalom to Moshe, if he's not allowed to support her himself, then he can't explicitly appoint a shliach for it either. So we'll see later on in the Gemara exactly how that shliach gets appointed.
The Gemara will
tell you
that first from here.
Yeah, 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 yeah. If it's any longer than a month, then he divorces her and gives her ksuba. Now, Tosfos talks about a couple of things over here. First of all, Tosfos says that, not like Rashi that says that, in fact, the hana of tashmish would have been included in the neder, except that he's meshubad for her. Tosfos learns differently. The hana of tashmish to begin with is not included in the neder. When he says milahonis loy, he means specifically hana as far as food and as far as food and clothing and whatever. Tashmish was never meant to be included in the first place, Tosfos says, not like Rashi. Second of all, then Tosfos gets into a long discussion. When we say here and in various places in the parak, yotzi v'yitim ksuba, what does that mean? Does it mean that we force him to divorce her? that, and we actually beat him if he doesn't want to? Or does it mean that we just tell him, you're required to divorce her, and if not, if you don't do that, then you're an Avarian. You're somebody who's over on what the Chachamim say. However, we can't force you to.
Literal interpreting,
Milahonis Loi. Means from having Hana from him. So therefore, Rashi says it would have included Tashmish, except for the fact that she had that he has a shibud on her for Tashmish, and therefore he can't. Tosfa says to begin with that, that Loshen is not meant to include that in the first place.
What else would it mean if it's not
Tashmish? It could mean Hanoas Mazonis. It means the Hana, that she gets food and then another support from him. That's what Tosfa says.
Why,
anyway.
Why are we breaking up the three things that he's a Mechuyif?
Because right. As far as Mazonis, as far as Sher and Tsus, those are Tznoim Sheba Mamon, and we're going to say in the Gemara, those can be overridden when necessary. We learned earlier in the Masechta, actually. We're going to discuss it in our Gemara now. She can say, I'll support myself. Maybe even the husband can say, I won't support you and you support yourself. That's what we're going to talk about in the Gemara. Yeah. Anyway, so Tosfos ends up saying in the last lines of Tosfos that it's not so simple to force any person to divorce his wife unless we find a clear proof that we're allowed to. After all, we know get was a puzzle. A get that's forced is puzzle. So it becomes very complicated. This is one of the sources for you have the whole matter. Unfortunately, you have nowadays people, you have men who don't want to give get, and you have women who don't want to receive them. You have all kinds of cases like that. And so often they end up in the headlines. But one thing is, now there are cases, al pi halacha, as we're going to learn in our parak, where we do force a husband to divorce his wife. But Tosfos says, unless we have a clear proof that this is one that in any individual case, that this is one of those cases, then we can't necessarily do that. Otherwise, you have a problem. Get will be possible. Anyway. Well, so that's the thing. Tosfos says, when it says yoitzi, that's the thing. Tosfos says here, when it says yoitzi, and a number of places in our parak where it says yoitzi, does it mean that we force him to give her a get? Or does it just mean that we try to convince him to give her a get, but we don't have the ability to force him? We know that the get has to be given with the husband's ratzon. So we know, for example, there's a famous line in the Rambam that says that when in cases where halacha empowers us to force the husband, then even though he doesn't really want to, but deep down he wants to because he's Yetzer Tov, etc., the Rebbe used to quote it innumerable times. But the fact is, it has to be a case where al pi halacha we're required to force him. So Tosfos says this is not necessarily one of those cases. Yotzi over here may just mean that we have to convince him to divorce her, and we tell him, if not, then you're an avarian. We put social pressure on him, but not necessarily that we put physical pressure on him.
We always have to assume that the Isha gets Hana from Tashmish.
Yeah, she does get Hana from Tashmish. We would hope so, anyway. We have to assume that, yeah. Okay, onward. Yeah, okay. The other option would mean that we convince
him. That he should give
that he should.
His money should be there for her.
Yeah, but...
And opposite to his heder.
No, because once he divorces her, then the neder is no longer in effect. The neder is meant to be only while they're married.
So what kind of social pressure can we
So the social pressure we can put on him is we tell him.
Against his will?
Whatever it is, I don't know, however it is. But Tosfos discusses that maybe we can only tell him verbally that he needs to. People will be allowed to call you an Avalian. People walking down the street will be allowed to say, hey, there goes the Avalian Shmerel who doesn't want to divorce his wife. Yeah, anyway. Let's go on. The Mishnah says...
Sorry, what was his point of making the neder in the first
place? What the point was of making the neder? It's a good question. Actually, the Gemara is going to end up saying, we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, the possibility that maybe it's not even that he made the neder. The possibility could even be that she made the neder and he was Mekayim. We know that a husband has the right, apitorda, to veto certain nedarim of his wife's, but instead he might be Mekayim and he might say, you know what, good for you. I approve of this neder, or at least he doesn't cancel it on the day that he's supposed to, and then it's in effect. So the Gemara is going to discuss that. We're going to learn that on Daf Ayin Aleph. We're going to talk about that point. Who is it that made the neder here in the first place? But it could happen for whatever reason. The husband and the wife are on the outs with each other. Anyway.
I mean, they're obviously arguing.
Yeah, obviously. Okay, let's go on. We have ground to cover. So yeah. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda Omer B'Yisrael Chodesh Echad Yekayim. Rabbi Yehuda says it's not just like the Tanna Kamma said 30 days. If it was a Yisrael, then if it's up to 1 month, and we'll see in the Gemara whether it means a month of 29 or 30 days, Yekayim, then he can stay married to her, and eventually maybe he'll have Charata and be Matur Neder. And if not, if he divorces her, no big deal. They can always get remarried. B'Koyin. But if it's 2 months already or more, which the Rashba explains, if it's already going into a second month, then Yotzi V'yitin K'suba, then he divorces her and gives her a K'suba. But if it's a Koyin, where if he divorces her, he's not going to be able to remarry her, Shnayim Yekayim, then we give him a longer amount of time to have Farota. for up to 2 months, then he can keep her. Once we get to 3 months already, then he has to divorce her and give her uksuba. Again, either as Tosfos discusses, do we force him or do we just try to convince him? Okay, another case. Hamadiras ishtar shleititem echam nikola peiris. If he puts his wife under a neder that she should not taste any of a certain kind of fruit. Tosfos explains, by the way, later on, echad mikol haperis doesn't mean that he says you can't eat any fruit. That would be an impossible neder to keep. He means that he says about some particular species of fruit, you're not allowed to eat this under a neder. So then, the Gemara is going to discuss later, did she make the neder and he was mekayim it? Did he make the neder? Whatever it is. Yotzi v'yit in ksuba. Then again, he divorces her and gives her a ksuba because that's not the kind of thing that can last for any amount of time. Again, Rabbi Yehuda says that there's a difference in that between a Yisrael and a Kohen. Yisrael, Yoimachir Yekayim, Shnayim Yotzi V'yitin Ksuba. If he's a Yisrael, then if this lasts for up to 1 day, then that's fine. More than that, once it gets into the second day, Yotzi V'yitin Ksuba, because this is already an impossible situation. Or a Kohen, now the difference is when it came to the Maduras Ishto, you can arrange it through a Parnas. When it comes to this Echon Mikol HaPeiros, there's no workaround available. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that we don't allow it to go on for more than 1 or 2 days. Or a Koyin, when it comes to a Koyin, Shnayim Yekayim, if it's up to 2 days, then let him keep her. Shloisha, once it comes to 3 days, Yotzi V'yitin Ksuba, then he divorces her and gives her a Ksuba.
What's this with Rabbi Yehuda, 2 or 3? No,
that's something else. Miyom Liyoyim means that it's not 24 hours, first of all. It's only till Shtia. It's till Shtia that he has the right to cancel her neder. But here we're talking about he didn't cancel her neder. In fact, the Gemara is going to say it may be that he was Mekayim it, that he actually said, good for you, I approve of this neder, and then he can't cancel it anymore. So now we're saying, but if within the 1 day or 2 days or whatever, he hasn't gone to be Matir Neder, or she hasn't gone to be Matir Neder, as the case may be, then Yotzi V'yitin Ksuba. Yeah. Okay, the Mishnah continues. Hamadiras Ishtar Shel Diskashet Be'echad Mikol HaMinin. If he puts his wife under a neder that she shouldn't beautify herself with any of a certain kind of perfume or cosmetic or whatever. In all these cases, it actually explains that she made the neder and he was Mekayim it for her, but we're going to see in the Gemara that there were different opinions about that. Anyway. So then, Yotzi V'yitin Ksuba, then he should also divorce her and give her a Ksuba, because that's also not a situation that she should be in. Rabbi Yossi says, if she's poor, then there's no particular limited amount. So then Yotzi V'yitin Ksuba. In other words, Rabbi Yossi is saying, if he put a limit on it, if he said this neder is in effect for a week or a month or whatever, then fine, we'll see in the Gemara how much it can be with poor women. But poor women don't use cosmetics as much anyway, so therefore it's not that much of an inu for her. Uvashiros, rich women who usually wear cosmetics, shloshim yom, then the maximum is 30 days. If he made the neder for, she made the neder and he was Mekayim or whatever, for up to 30 days, then fine. But more than 30 days, then we have a problem. By the Anius, only if he said it's open-ended. You're never again allowed to wear the staff, as opposed to by a Shiras. So the Gemara says, but given to Meshubad law, the Gemara asked in the first part of the Mishnah, he has a Shibud for her for Bezonis. Heichi Matzi Madua. How could he make a neder and override that? Kol Kamina Demaskele the Shibud. Does he have the ability to take away the Shibud? Which, by the way, now we did learn earlier in the Masechta that a Koinam, which is a form of neder, has the ability to override a Shibud. However, Tosfos discussed over there that the Chachamim strengthen the Shibud of the wife against her husband and of the husband on his wife, that they can't override it with a Koinam. So that's the Gemara's question is over here. How does he have the ability to do that? We learn in a Mishnah in Nedarim, which we've quoted several times in our Masechta, Koinam she'eni oisa l'ficha. If the wife makes a neder of a koinam that whatever I produce, my maisi yadav, is also to your mouth, is also for you to eat or have benefit from it, and it's sorach l'hafer. So he doesn't have to even cancel that neder. He doesn't even have to veto that neder because it can't be chal in the first place because she has a shibud for maisi yadav to him. So, by the way, we did learn over there that Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri holds that it can be chal. And so Tosfos discusses over there, why don't we say that our Mishnah goes like Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri? What did Tosfos answer there? So Tosfos said, but that's the thing, because when it comes to even Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is only saying that is only saying sarich lahafer, that he needs to be mefer because a certain part of it can take effect or whatever. But to say a general koinam and to aser her hana in general to him, he doesn't have the ability to do that, because again the chachamim made her shibur extra strong that even a koinam can't override that. Okay. So the answer is so Alma. So we see Kibin de Meshabdele, she has a shibud to him from Maisia Deha, et Lav Kok Minna de Mafdalai the Shibude. She doesn't have the ability to override that shibud with her neder. Hochanami, the same thing in our Mishnah. Kibin de Meshubaba, he has a shibud to her to give her Mazonis. Lav Kok Minna de Mafdalai the Shibuda. How does he have the ability to take away her shibud? So rather, Ella, Mitoch Shiyochaloimala, because the husband has the ability to say, "Tsi masia daich b'mzenisayich." He has the ability to say that make one thing go in place of the other. We learned earlier she gives him a maisia da'ah and she gets mizonis. We talked about earlier which was the primary takana and which was the result of it. Is it the primary takana was she should give him a maisia da'ah and in return for that she gets mizonis, or is it the other way around? The primary takana is she's entitled to mizonis, and in order to avoid Ava, in order to avoid the husband shouldn't resent her, look, I'm giving you and I'm not getting anything in return, then she gives her a maisia da'ah. So the question basically becomes, was the takana for the benefit of the wife or the husband? So now we can take the view that the takana is for the benefit of the husband. Therefore, he has the ability to say, you know what, I don't need your maisia da'ah. You keep that, and you get your own mezonis. I don't need your maisia daich. So thus he has the ability to make a neder to say therefore that the maisia daich are also to him. So nasa ka'im Allah. So here, when he makes this neder, it's considered, even though he didn't explicitly say si maisia daich from mezonisayif, we consider it as if he said si maisia daich from mezonisayif. That must have been when he made the neder. We have a concept we learned earlier in the Masechta. Ein on a motzi dvar of avatala. A person doesn't say a neder for nothing. So if he made this neder knowing that he has a shibud on her from Isiadel, the answer is that he must have been implying that from now on we're going to arrange things differently and you're keeping your Isiadel. Okay. The Gemara asks. Now going back to the other opinion. Well, wait. So the question is, what about though, if we follow what Rav Huna says in the name of Rab, where it's the other way around, the wife has the ability to initiate this by saying, I don't need your support and I'm not going to do my siyadav. Well then, according to that, let's go back to that Mishnah that we quoted from the Dorim, when she says, Koinam Shani Oisa Laficha, when she says a Koinam, that whatever I produce is also for your mouth, Amai Enet Sarach Lahafer. Why shouldn't he have to be made for that? The Mishnah is saying over there, according to the Tanakhama, that he doesn't need to. But why not? Lema, why don't we say, Mitoch Sheikhola Loma Enin Izonis Veni Oisa, since she has the ability to forego the Mizonis and therefore to say, I'm not giving Maisia to her. In other words, again, according to Rav Huna, the Takana is basically for her benefit, and therefore she has the right to override it. So since she could do that, Nasa Kimisha Merisla Enin Izonis Veni Oisa, why don't we say the same thing? When she makes this neder, it's the equivalent of saying Enin Izonis Veni Oisa. And yet we say that it's not, and the husband doesn't have to be made for the neder. So why in our Mishnah would we be saying that when he says, when he's Madus Ishtoi, why would we say that Nasa Ka'imala? Where do we get this Nasa Ka'imala business? So rather the answer is you're right. It's not that we assume that he meant Nasa, Ella Ba'oimala. We're talking about an on Mishnah where he explicitly says, Si'i Masiya Daif Mzenasayah, where he says, instead, I'm not taking your Maisiya Daif anymore. They're also to me. You use your Maisiya Daif to buy your own food. So now, since we're saying he has the ability to do that, he has the ability to say Tsi Masiya Daif Mzenasayah. Just as much as she has the right to say Eini Nizonis Sveini Osa, then the result is that the neder can be chal. That we don't say that it's overriding his shibud to her, because he would have had the right to override that shibud even without a neder by saying Tsi Masiya Daif Mzenasayah. Well, the question is, Yehochi Parnas Lamala, then why do we need a Parnas? In that case, then fine. She's selling her Maisi Yodah. She's getting money for food for herself. Our Mishnah is saying that he appoints a Parnas to support her. If we said that it meant that, in fact, that she's giving him her Maisi Yodah and she's not getting Mazonis, because he made a neder asking her to receive mazonis from him, then fine, we need a pounus, because how else is she gonna support herself? But if we're saying that he's saying from now on you're self-supporting, what's the point of the pounus? The answer is, Bidaloi Sofka. The answer is the parnas is needed if her maisi yodayim are not enough for the mazonis that she needs. We learned earlier on Samach Dalet Amud Beis, the minimum amounts that the husband has to provide his wife for food. So now, let's say her maisi yodayim isn't enough. Prices have gone up, and it's not enough to buy all that. Well, the question is, then we're back to the original question. He has a shibud to provide her mazonis. He can say tsi ma'asi yada for mazonis science. But the fact remains, if her ma'asi yada are not enough for mazonis, then he has to provide more. So we're back to, how does he have the ability to make a neder to override that? The answer is, amar avashi b'maspekas the dvorim gedolim, ve'en maspekas the dvorim ktani. The answer is that the ma'asi yada are enough for the big things, like the bread and the beans and whatever, the things that are the basics of the meal. But they're not enough for dvarim ktanim, for example, extras like meat or fish or whatever. So after all, we could say that his shibud doesn't apply to the dvarim ktanim. Well, the question is, why not? Hani dvarim ktanim heikidami? What's the scenario with these dvarim ktanim? Idir gila bahu, if these are things that she's regularly been eating until now, until he made this neder, the harigilabahu, she's already used to them. He can't just take it away willy-nilly like that. That becomes part of her mazonis. And if she's not used to having them anyway, parnas lamala, then what does she need a parnas for to supply them when she hasn't been having them until now anyway? The answer is the case would have to be where she was used to having them when she was living at home with her parents. Base nosha means the house, it means the house of the women, it means like where she was growing up, where she grew up. But become a gaugel of a day. Now, when she gets married, her husband says, you know what, I can't afford, or in my family, we don't eat fish and meat, whether it's we can't afford, whether it's we're vegans or whatever. So she says, fine, you know what, I'll manage. But now he made this neder. Now it's a different situation. The Amrele, she says, ad ha'idna d'lo adarchan, until now, when you didn't make this neder, putting hanaf new off limits to me, gaugil nabadnaf, then fine, I'm willing to manage with you. I'm used to eating until now, fish and meat. That's how I grew up, but I'm willing to do without it because you don't have. Hashta adarchan, but now that you made the neder, loy matzina the igal gabadoch, I don't want to have to manage with you anymore. I want to go back to the old style that I was accustomed to having fish and meat. And if you're not going to supply them, then you need to supply a parnas who will do so. So Tosfos explains in the words that she's saying, to begin with, she was moichel on the fish and the meat, but she was never moichel having in mind that in the future he could be madir like this. So therefore, her mechila is no longer effective. Therefore, he has the responsibility now to supply her with fish and meat. Since he can't because of the neder, and her own maisi yadeha are not enough to buy it, therefore he needs to appoint a parnas, whereas the Gemara is going to say further on, that parnas will give her the fish and the meat, and the husband will reimburse it. So the Gemara asks, Maishna alamed yoim. So in that case, why is the Mishnah putting a limit of 30 days on it? Mela, if we were understanding until now that we're talking about that it's an absolute neder and that she doesn't have what to support herself or whatever. So fine, you know, up to 30 days she can manage with a parnas supporting her, but after that, not. But now that we're talking, it's only about luxuries like fish and meat. Why dafka the limitation of 30 days? And the answer is ad lamed yoim lo shami ba'inchi, because up to 30 days people don't hear about what's going on. But it's not such a bizoyan to her that she's being supported by a third party. In other words, the potential bizoyan is people eventually are going to start saying that Ashba says, I mean, what's the matter with her? That her husband doesn't even want to support her. He made a neder asking her from Hana from him. What's going on over here? So up to 30 days, though, people haven't heard about it. So therefore, there's no zilusa in it. Today, but once 30 days have passed, Shami Ba'inchi, people hear what's going on, the Zilla Bamilsa, so therefore it's already a bizoyan to her that people hear and they start spreading rumors about what might be going on between her and her husband. So all that's one answer. Okay, so all that's one answer that again, the neder is chal on everything, but we're saying as far as the basics that she needs, she can use Maisi Odeha for it, and then for the luxuries, for the fish and the meat, then we're saying that a parnas is supplied for that. The Ibois Amen. The Gemara has another possible answer. She dirak she arusta. The case of On Mishnah would be talking about that he made the neder to asser her when she was an arusa. Well, the question is, arusa mi isla mizoni. So what? She doesn't get mizonis at all during that point. Oh. So what's the problem? Yeah, she's living still in her parents' house. The answer was she giyazman v'lo nisu. We're talking about where the time for the wedding came, where they used to have, in general, it was 12 months, as we learned earlier in the Masechta for Abisola. In general, it was 12 months between the Erusin and the Nisuin. Now the 12 months are over, and he's v'lo nisu, and they haven't gotten married because the husband is delayed. Ditznan, and we learned earlier in our Masechta, giyazman v'lo nisu, once that time has come, and they haven't gotten married yet, at that point, the wife is entitled, the kala is entitled to be supported by the chassan. But uchlis with truma, and if the chassan is a koyin, then she's already allowed to eat truma. We said that was Mishnah Rishon. Mishnah Achrona said she can't eat truma until she actually gets married because of various reasons we talked about over there, family or simpon or whatever. Anyway, the point is that we see once the 12 months are over, she's entitled to mezonos. So that's what we're talking about. So now the 12 months have passed, she's entitled to mezonos, even though she's still living at home. So that would be the case. Well, then the question is, Rashi explains that since midaraisa, he doesn't yet have a shibud at that point during the erusin to give her mezonos, therefore the neder can be chal. Because after all, the neder is an isur daraisa, and the mezonos, while she's an arusa, is only the rabbanon. Tosfos objects that earlier in the Masechta we learned that mezonos and nesua are also only drabbanon. So both of them are drabbanon. And a couple of other questions that Tosfos has. So rather, Tosfos says that what it means is when we're saying yamid parnas means like this. It means when he made the neder, it was within the 12 months. So therefore, it could be chal at that point. Now, once the 12 months are over, we're saying yamid parnas, if the neder is still in effect, at that point, then he has to appoint a parnas to support her, because now he's required to support her and he can't because of the neder. Therefore, he appoints a parnas who deals with things, and that's for up to 30 days. But in other words, the point is, Tosfos says, if this had happened after they got married, then you don't even need a parnas, because then Tosfos brings from the Gemara further on that she apparently accepted the situation and is willing to manage with her Maisi Adaha, and therefore we don't need a parnas at all. Okay. So the Gemara says, well, according to that explanation, then why dafka 30 days, as it says in our Mishnah? And the answer is ad shloshim yom ovad shliach shlichuse, because up to 30 days, we can assume the shliach will do his shlichus. Today, like ovad shliach shlichuse, after that, we can't necessarily say that he's going to continue following his shlichus, especially since the Gemara explains further down on the Amud, which we'll learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that we're not talking about, again, the husband did not explicitly appoint him a shliach. He said, we're going to say further in the Gemara, that he says, kol azon enim mafsid, anyone who supports my wife won't lose out. In other words, he's hinting by that, he's giving a broader hint that I will reimburse him, but he's not explicitly appointing him a shliach. So after 30 days, the guy might say, why should I bother anymore? As opposed to if he had been officially appointed a shliach, like we had earlier on some Dalet Amud Beis, for example, we had a mashra es ishtei ayudei sholish, where he's arranging for food for his wife through a third party because he's not living at home. There we didn't put any limitations because then he officially appointed him a shliach. So chazaka shliach oisa shlichosei. But here we didn't officially appoint him a shliach. That's one explanation. That's the Ritva's explanation. The Rashba says you don't necessarily need that. You may mean he'll do his shlichus, but he'll do it with a sour face and whatever, and he's going to be embarrassing her. The boyisema, yet another possibility is kshiyarusa v'nissis. It means that he made the neder once she was an arusa v'nissis, and now they got married. So that's when we're talking about ina parnas. Well, the question is, nissis, what do you mean? If she was willing to get married to him under such conditions, hasavar v'kibla. She obviously was willing to accept the conditions. Why all of a sudden does he need to appoint a parnas and we're saying the 30 days limit or whatever? The answer is d'amra, because she can answer, kisvura ani shani yichol l'kabel. I thought that I would be able to manage it. Achshav ein ani yichol l'kabel. Now I see I can't manage it like that anymore. So at that point, we say a parnas and the month. So the question is, what do you mean? We say such a thing when it comes to mumim. Later on in the perek, we're going to talk about where the wife has mumim or the husband has certain kinds of mumim. So we say that sometimes you're able to say, you know what, I thought I would be able to manage with this kind of thing, but now I see that it's intolerable. Since when do we say that by mezonos? She should have realized in the first place, a person can't live without mezonos. So she should have realized the situation is that she's going to have to find her own or starve. So how could we say that? Elo, so the Gemara says, machvarta condition in Mi'ikra. So it's clear that we have to use the first answer. Which, so now we have three answers in the Gemara. One, we were talking about Dvarim Ktanim versus Dvarim Gadolim. One, where all of this is talking about while she's in Arusa. And the third, that it was in Arusa and then she got married. So the Ran explains the Gemara by this is rejecting both of those, the second and the third answer, and sticking with the first answer. That the case of our Mishnah would be as far as the Dvarim Ktanim and Dvarim Gadolim. So for the Dvarim Ktanim, he tells her, "See Masi Adai from Zenisayat. From now on, you're supporting yourself, and the dvarim ktan, the dvarim gdolim, rather the bread and the bread and the basics, she's able to manage the dvarim ktanim, the fish and the meat. She's not able to. That's when our Mishnah is saying, let him appoint a pioness to arrange for those. And if it lasts more than 30 days or more than a month, if it lasts more than 30 days or more than a month or 2 months or whatever, as Rabbi Yehuda had said in the Mishnah, then yotzi diyat and so on. Okay. Yeah. Everyone.